Hey, everybody, Bob Saget, and you know where I am. I'm here for you. That's all I do. I just wait here just to be here for you. Great, great person, really smart guy. I mean, he's been a comedian forever. I've known and loved him for a really long time. He's great political correspondent, CNN, you know, HBO, lots of shows, lots of credits, but he's also a great author. And I'll tell you about his books in a minute, but this is D.L. Hughley that we're going to have in just a few seconds. He's going to be zooming in. That's what we say here in the tech world of, of quarantine. A couple things I got to tell you, a little business, you know, the business. You got to rate, review, and subscribe, give it 5 stars. Otherwise I have to block you. No, that's not true. I don't do that, but no hate speech. That's bad. Why hate? Come on. Had enough. Haven't you had enough? So rate. With a T, review and subscribe, or you can follow depending on how you get your podcasts. That's another way. And then on certain days, there's a phone number up there. You can call it. And I'll be telling you on Twitter and on Instagram stories when I'll be calling people. And actually coming up just any minute now, any day now, will be people that I actually am putting on Zoom. We're going to have me talking to people and you'll see them as well. So I'll get to have one-on-one conversations with them. Like I would normally when it's just the audio on these podcasts. And if that works out, we'll do it more if you guys dig it. So D.L. Hughley has written a lot of books. There's one that I really liked, which is How Not to Get Shot and Other Advice from White People, which is, it says it right there. His book that's out right now, he's written a ton of books. I mean, he's so prolific and he's been through a lot of interesting stuff. And I'm going to say the other book that's out now in 1 second, had an experience because he passed out in Nashville on stage of Zany's, very good comedy club in Nashville, and he got hurt. And I was incredibly concerned and started texting him and called him. And I just love him and was anybody that knows his work and knows of him, of course, people that know him, he got pretty sick, coronavirus, his family got it. And so it's really pretty traumatic. And it's not as easy as people think. And it does exist. So if people think it doesn't, you're just wrong. You got to read and listen to a scientist rather than just, you know, the mailman. But he doesn't know much because he can't find the mailbox because they hid it in the river. Anyway, D.L. wrote another book, which comes out. It's out right now, actually. And it's called Surrender, White People. Surrender, White People are unconditional terms for peace. And that's a peaceful message as far as I take it. And next year, he has a book coming out called Predisposed. So I'm always predisposed, but he has so much to say and he has such a viewpoint that actually soothes me and makes me feel good and makes me feel that the human race is all one thing. And we just got to get through this time and have a lot of understanding and love. So with no further ado, here comes someone who's incredibly overflowing in those elements, D.L. Hughley. So back to how are you doing? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, man. In terms of just the state of the world, that's one thing. But me physically, I'm great. I mean, I think the COVID thing, I guess I've been negative for a little over a month and a half, and I'm still having to go to a cardiologist, but I feel great.
What did it do? Does it scar lungs, DL? Does it scar?
It does that. It does, you know, a lot of people who have it have, have heart abnormalities for a long time, so they're just trying to make sure everything's okay. So I'm just having dizzy spells every couple of days, so it's weird that way. But it's more of it is kind of the thing, the lingering effects of it. So I'm just having that. Me and my son are having that part, but we're negative and feeling better, exercising and getting back to doing what I love.
Did your son have it also?
Yeah. Everybody. I was a typhoid Marietta.
Oh, my
everybody
God.
Everybody you saw at the show had it. Yeah, everybody.
And it was before you got to Nashville, you had it before you got to Zany's.
I must have had it. I must have had.
And if not, you would have gotten it at Zany's because that's so closed. It's such a tight, not that the place is a petri dish, but it's a tight area.
But you know, they did all the protocols. They reduced chairs and had people with temp checks and masks. And it just, you know, it's funny because I left California to gig, and before that I'd been in Texas. So, you know, in California, you're not gonna. I think it'll be probably 2 years before there'll be live performances of any type. So you leave one state to another state, and all those the protocols become different. And I think that one of the things that is happening is that there's no sense of uniformity that, you know, kind of governs this thing. Everybody's doing what they want, and it's all for whatever municipality they serve. And I think it's really detrimental to the American population just in general.
Oh, it's inhuman. I mean, even when I'm hearing about herding, first thing, if you talk about people and use the word herd, we'll let these cows die. You know,
right. It kind of is like that, though. That's kind of how it happens.
They're saying just let everybody get it. That's kind of what I'm hearing right now.
Well, I think that's the approach. That's let everybody rob banks. Let everybody it's weird that would be it. And that's their conclusion, which is to do nothing, which is the perfect testament to the Trump administration. We're not going to do anything.
So let me just get this clear. You're anti the Trump administration. I want to be clear because I'm not 100% sure. I read your Twitter every day.
So, and I'm actually not even, I'm not anti-Republican. I'm anti-Trump. And I think.
I'm not anti-Republican either.
Yeah.
I'm anti-human. I'm anti-hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're anti the same things. I mean, we've known each other for, I don't know, it might be 30 years. I don't know.
Hey, longer than this technology, that's for sure.
Holy shit. I was before YouTube on that freaking video show. Probably met you then. I probably met you in my...
Yeah, we're older than this technology, that's for sure. But I just think that what people forward as reasonable arguments is insane to me. Like, you know, the idea that you justify an unarmed man getting shot in the back 6 times, and then you justify a young kid, 17 years old, who shouldn't be old enough to have a gun, killing 2 people that had nothing to do, that only did because of their political opposition, and that you justify murder. And like, where I'm from, And the mother drove the kid. I mean, what we've done is killed any humanity. Like, we can't tell what's right and wrong. Like, now we live in a society, we can't make an estimation about what's right or wrong. And everything is bent to our perspective. I just think, when a man tells you that he's a unifier, but he separates us by democratic states and democrat, you can't unify a country like that. And you have a president right now who's has a vested interest in mayhem, so that it makes him look like he's in control of the very thing that is kind of at this apex because he started.
He like started he gave, it the day he started. He was a cheerleader for this, and that's what it was, and that's what hurts me because I keep going. There has to be a person in there. Where did he not get love? You know, and then I go, well, I don't care about him anymore. I just care about people because we got to protect innocent people. And there's extremists everywhere. I don't know. We're of the same. I didn't know some stuff about you. Now, last time we really had a conversation was on your podcast.
Right.
Which I loved, by the way. You're such
a... Want to be back September 15th. So you coming around. I hope we'll have you right back on.
I would love it because there's no one like you. I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, Bill Maher can be a guy that can be kind of, I've known him forever, so we're friends, but he could be cold to some people, and he just lights up when you're nearby. Not that he's the moniker of everything, but I love Bill. And
me too.
And you just have a handle on it that a lot of people don't, because, I mean, I was profiled as a kid for being Jewish in Norfolk, Virginia, and you were in Portsmouth.
Yeah, I was born in Portsmouth, yeah.
Right. And I was in Philly and then went to Norfolk and I was, you know, threw rocks at my head, called me.
Right.
I can't imagine what it was like to be a black man in that time. I mean, there was segregation when I was five.
Right, right. It's amazing that people, they always act as if it was a long time ago. Now, I'm 56, and I'm the first one of my mother's children who was born with the full rights of an American citizen, the first one. And so when you look at it from that perspective, and I think I was reading recently where it talked about how support for Black Lives Matter was 61% in June, and now it's 48% for the protests. And so we're dealing with decades, centuries of slavery and Jim Crow and kind of racial bias. But America could only take it for a month of summer.
Right.
America is on board for like a month of summer.
Well, it's the people that weren't affiliated that did the set fire to businesses. And that's where people go, I can't support this. But that's not the cause.
But the funny thing about it is, there's documented evidence of people coming, to do what it is done to start the upheaval.
Right.
Like I knew when and they blamed everything on the black protesters, but when that Popeye's chicken went up in Minneapolis, I knew that wasn't us. I was like, come on now, come on. It's some shit you can't blame on us. It's enough. we just got the sandwich back, and now all of a sudden we're gonna burn up the fucking stop.
200 years to get the sandwich.
Right now, all of a sudden, they ran out of chicken, and when they get it back, we burn the fucking Popeyes down. But it's insane that people are.
No, there's no self-loathing. There's pride. Right. Let's destroy what we need and love.
Right, 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 right.
No, it's about human dignity and respect and all this stuff. And
I think, honestly, man, there are a lot of people who don't quite see us as human. We're not quite American. You know, one of the saddest things I saw was Herman Cain, who really died in service of that idea. Yep. That COVID wasn't real and that there was no harm, that you didn't have to wear a mask and it was all hyperbole, died. And his tribute was the fact that the RNC, nobody mentions his name.
I know.
Because that's really how they like their black guys. Quiet.
Well, it's the president going, here's my black guy over here.
Right, right.
And
right.
I hear that and I go, what?
Right.
Where am I?
Right. This is really, you know what's so funny? My father, I lost him a little while ago, but
I'm sorry.
Me too. But this is so like the America that they always described to us growing up. It's so familiar to me. Now, I'm not even trying to forward an idea that we haven't made progress, but at what cost? And the progress we have made was made over mentalities like this. These people have always played this part.
Yeah.
They've always played these parts. These are the descendants of people who always, and every ounce of progress we ever had was over their protests, over their objections, over their violence. And it always is the same thing. But every time we stagger forward, there's a lot of blood, there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of deaths. Every time we move forward. So
and that's the fear and fear mongering.
Yeah.
That is being used, that I will keep you safe, otherwise they're coming into your neighborhood.
Right.
It's like good.
Right. You know what you'll never see, and it's so funny, and I know we're gonna talk about a lot of stuff, but when I hear people say those people,
I'm so happy to see you, by the way.
Likewise,
I'm talking
man.
To you, but I get this listeners, I get to see you. Because this is what's weird. I want to get back to what you're saying, but when you passed out, there's something because of this quarantine has brought out more emotion in me than I've possessed for a very long time. I've had it, but we're always working. We care about our kids. I know you have a family you love. I have kids I love. I got a wife and stuff. And my wife and my kids are different people, which is good. Because, you know, some of those crackers
Let's not judge West Virginia. Let's leave them out of it.
You know what? People got to reproduce however they do.
right.
But it's just interesting that with comedians, something came out in me because so many of us that are comedians, I look at us as a different type of It's a family. There is a family here. Right. And a lot of us, of people that you wouldn't expect are on a pulpit. I mean, Jim Gaffigan going off. You would never, he was talking about Hot Pockets and making videos with his kids.
Bacon. Yeah, right. He's hilarious.
He's hilarious. He's brilliant. He's prolific as hell. And look at the essay he wrote on Facebook.
And look at how many kids he has. This dude is—he's obviously fucking and writing, Jack. He's not—he's not staying at home. He's not.
He says he's a Christian. You know, he cares about life. You know, he's—it's not. This is not a political thing.
No, not.
And it's been turned into that because we're in that stupid season that I hope we get rescued from.
What to me is really simple. I just. The point I was making earlier was they were talking about, you know, I was watching the RNC and I was, it's interesting that you as a speaker, you could get two people who held guns on protesters to endorse you, but you can't get two people who once held the presidency to endorse you. Like it's right. You can, but they were talking about safety and they were talking about, I'll keep you safe. And the problem is that if you ask black people, by and large, safety is something we've never felt. So when you say that you're going to keep us safe from that never has applied to us. Like buildings are safe in our communities. When they call in a National Guard, they're not called to keep us safe. They're called to protect the O'Reilly Auto Parts and the CVS drugstores and the McDonald's. Those buildings are safer than we are.
I know.
And so when we talk about safety, it's a nice notion, one that I've heard a lot about. It would be nice if it were a universal platitude, if it were universal.
Well, right now, that's what Biden is talking about. He's talking about not defunding the police, but funding them in a way that helps people that live in black neighborhoods, that live in projects, and to help them and send police in there because they are scared.
Right. No one. It's a very interesting time. And I think it's harder to take, particularly when you're a comedian, because for us, we would have been on stage talking about this.
And we can't.
Like now you gotta, it's like literally going through withdrawal, like literally those same pains, emotional longing, the withdrawal, the pain, is really, I kind of think, what a lot of us are going through. And I think a lot of people, I think kids can't go to school, and I think parents can't get a break, and I think, so I think a lot of people are having withdrawals because they're not able to be the things that they were, and everything's going crazy. And so but I think to some extent it's been great because people are having to focus on things they never would have seen before. So it's just, all of these things are happening. And there's nowhere to talk about it except Zoom.
Well, that's why I'm glad your podcast is coming back, because this for me has been a gift. I get to talk to people that I care about. I call real people that aren't, real.
Well, no, it
sounds such a shitty thing to say.
It sounds
because
like
truth. That means that only showbiz people are real people.
No, you said you call real people. You didn't say you call showbiz people. Hey, you know what's funny? I remember when I was in the hospital. And I got calls from you and Leno.
I was freaking out, DL.
Everybody was scared.
I was freaking out. And you were like laughing because I was crying. I watched the tape. I was like, fuck, I can't lose DL.
Yeah, and so did I. I thought the same
thing. I bet you did.
But I got calls from so many people. And even Diamond and Silk went, all right, well, we don't agree on anything, but I hope you're all right. And so at a certain point, you got to be able to lay down some things and just be human. Like when Biden called Trump about his brother, Trump would have never did that.
He wouldn't do it. And in a debate, he wouldn't do it. He'd play dirty pool with his family. And I hope if there's a debate that Biden gets it up enough to say, hey, I cared about you as a person. He's working on saying things. I'll tell you something. Trump could play tricks and win. He could actually do tricks. He could actually say, I'd like to apologize. I'd like to, he can do anything. He's this weird salesman. He could say, my heart goes out to all those, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and you know.
He doesn't possess it.
But if and he
now,
did.
And now the he's so nakedly, like the ship has sailed. But here's the thing. I think now it's great to have people that you've known and liked and respected for a long time who are out there. And just because I think one of the things that people are missing is a level of human connection. Like my daughter doesn't hug me anymore. Like, cause she's scared that she'll give me something or I'll give her something. Aww. You can't go see your parents. The graduations were bullshit. Like they would just stand you out and drive by. We're so proud of you.
Right. Like, it was like an SNL episode.
Right. And so like it's really, it's like sensory deprivation. Like you don't know what is up or down and you don't know how anything feels. And it's because we're not connected anymore. And I just think all the things we used to find comfort in, you can't just watch Mind the CD. You can't just, like I watched Netflix and I watched The Tiger King, which I would have never watched.
Same here. I watched the whole thing, and Carol Baskin killed her husband. Yeah. That's all I got.
I never watched. But I did learn this, Bob. I learned that if a man pets a tiger for a long enough time, pretty soon he's going to fuck a dude. I do know that.
Well, those are two things that will. Well, I mean, I'm not being prejudiced against petting a tiger, but the other thing could happen. I mean, you know, I'm still relatively young.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
I might go to jail just for yelling at somebody wrong. You know, I mean, I'm a little angry. I mean, I think we're all mad as hell and can't take it anymore.
Right. But everybody, the spirit, like, in the end, I mean. I think our craft is about people not knowing if you're serious or not.
Right.
Like, that it's not up to me to explain or to, like, now everything has to have an LOL or a JK.
But right, the right emoji.
Right. It's just to not let people know what we're thinking. And now that whole sensory deprivation, nobody can, it's just a weird time. And I'm glad I'm here for it. Because I would never be able to explain it to people, but it's sad. It really is sad.
But don't you, I feel somehow we're going to rise out of this better.
I don't know.
I have to think so, DL. I don't know what to do. I'm thinking it might take a couple years, but you know, when you think about the 60s and when you think about the marches and when you think about people dying and you think about the riots and against anti-war stuff, it took a few years.
But
I mean, it's like mankind can fail upward, I hope.
But look at how many riots since the 60s that have the exact same reasons that the riots happened before the 60s. The exact same reasons. And I think, yes, we're going to do things differently. Yes, there will be, it's kind of fits and starts. But ultimately, I don't think we can ever move forward until we decide that it's imperative that all of us be treated the same way and all of us have the same opportunities and to pretend like it's true because getting rid of these things is like losing that last 10 pounds. Like, it's so fucking hard that after a while you just start wearing black like we're doing right now.
I'm 3 weeks from losing that last 10.
Like, fuck that.
I lost the first 10. And then then I put back 2 because I had a rough week.
Right. And so after a while you go, fuck it, I'm just going to wear black shirts. Yeah, and change the filter on my phone.
I turned Johnny Cash years ago. I just couldn't help it. So there's a show I was watching and I couldn't binge on it because it's only been 3 episodes and it's on HBO Max and it's called Lovecraft Country.
Oh man, it looks great. And I've got to see my wife and kids.
Yeah, the kids, how old are the kids? Because it is upsetting. It's a horror thing.
Oh no, my kids are. I'm going to be a grandfather in 4 or 5 months.
No, you're
6
not.
Months. I am.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, man. And I know it's even before they showed us the ultrasound, I knew it was a girl. I knew it was a girl. I could just sense. But when I saw the ultrasound, sound. Before they announced what it was, I saw a little, the umbilical cord went straight from her to my wallet. And I went, that's a girl. I knew that's a girl.
Well, my joke used to be when as soon as I got aroused before sex, before having my first kid, I had to register for school. You know, you got no time. You as soon as anything happens, you know, you're kind of screwed. So it goes right to your wallet. Everything.
Yeah, all the time.
I'm fine with that. You know what? My oldest is 33 and she's got a boyfriend. And
mine too.
Oh, we have the same stuff going on. Yeah, she's not pregnant. I think she's waiting until the earth stops burning.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't. So I feel betrayed a little. I do. I feel betrayed.
Why?
Like, even though my daughter graduated and waited till she got married and married a great dude, and now she's knocked up and I have no use for her.
She's ruined.
The trollop. She's been tampered with. I can't use her anymore.
Why would you have let him do that?
I feel like that.
Used to have guys come over the house, this house actually, and my daughter's two older ones would have a party, and a couple guys would come in, and they'd get, we're going to take a jacuzzi. I went, the guy goes, hey, you got a bathing suit I can borrow? I went, no. Yeah. He said, well, I don't have one. Okay, here's my longest bathing suit.
Right.
And then I would just mess with them. I'd fuck with them. I'd go, let me see your eyes. Let me see your eyes. Look at me. Look at me. You want a shot? You want me to give you a shot? You want tequila? And if they even flinched, I went, you're not staying in this house. Me, of all people, you know, the guy you'd think be R-rated liberal dad, you know?
But you know what's so funny about you? I forgot where I was. And somebody had seen, I don't know where they'd seen you. I don't know where it was. And they were shocked, and I was like, you can't really think that is, because that's what happened. Was I talked to them when they were going to see you, and then I talked to them after, and I didn't think, I mean, I know how fucked up you are, so I was like, I didn't think like I didn't know I was supposed to warn them or something. And then they came back, and I was like, he makes me blush. I know you can't see it, but he makes, like, it's so funny because people are so married to a persona.
But that's just a gig. It's like when you did your family sitcom. That's a gig. Right. And then you get out here and we talk. And
yeah, but you say shit I've never heard people say.
I've stopped a little bit. With, you know, in the past 2 years, because of everything being so divided, I was on tour. I had a new hour ready to go. I was going to do a special. And then I canceled everything in March, as we all did.
Right.
And it was just more, it wasn't PG-13, it was PG-18 or something. I mean, I was cursing, but it was like, I was being funny, I was weird, but it was still more relevant. It was about racial issues. It was about growing up. It was about stuff that, right, you know how we are. We're like right on the precipice of what's going to happen. And I just felt it. I felt the dissension and the division and, it was just like, I couldn't take it. And so, you know, and I do music.
But the thing that's happening now is that now we have feelings. Like, I mean, obviously we always did. But now, the things that are most, that you feel the most tender about, you usually are the most hostile with on stage, right? The things that bother you the most.
Yes.
But now you can't even do that. And the funny thing,
right?
You talked, I wrote this book and it's called Surrender White People. And I started writing it like 2 years ago.
The titles of your books are like my favorite books.
Yeah, man. It's so, like I've written way many more books than I've
Wait, wait, I want to hear the end of that sentence, but I have to say this. Your first book is I Want You to Shut the Fuck Up, How the Audacity of Dopes is Ruining America. The second book is Black Man White House, An Oral History of the Obama Years. The third book is my favorite title, How Not to Get Shot and Other Advice from White People.
Yeah, so it's, and so I wrote this book and it came out, now still it's doing great. And they're like, it's so timely. How did you know? Because this is about, you know, like surrendering and us having a racial coming to reconciliation, and very funny and historical, because you can always write about the things you know, because they'll happen again.
Yeah.
And it like, I'm not Nostradamus. I just was writing from a prism, and it just happened to be the hot button issue. But that thing that we're doing right now, that we don't have, like, it's weird that we have to scratch that itch in so many different ways. You got to write, you got to do podcasts, you got to fucking do Zoom calls.
Yeah.
But to be away from the stage is sad.
I went up, Tom Papa said, you want to go up in front of 20 people, they'll all have masks on, you'll be 50 feet away. And I did it. And it felt good. It was weird. I didn't feel like I was back. I felt like I experienced it.
No. I never thought I'd see a disease or a virus that was so scary to America, they would let black people walk around with masks on. I never thought that. Like, hey, get out of that bank without this mask. All right. Like, well, it's so surreal.
But then you look at the RNC, and they proved a point. Nobody has masks. I'd love to know how many people got sick from that.
I don't want
them to get sick, but I bet they did.
I think that Trump's brother died of COVID. And if you listen, and it's not me being ironic, listen to what Laura Ingraham said 2 days ago when she was talking. And she talked about how empathic he was because he had a brother that died. His brother died of it. His friend died. Yeah. His brother died. Listen to it, because and how horrible are you that somebody you love, you can't even mourn or for fear that something you say could damage you politically?
Yeah. I mean, he said he loved him, but, you know, I don't know. Everybody's judging everything. The bite is that he's golfing that day of the burial, and he has to have love. I mean, he knows his daughter's hot.
I don't know.
That's pure love. No, he thinks his daughter's hot. That's love, right?
Right. I don't know if it starts with an L. and it's four words, but I don't know if it's love.
It's the aristocrats. The aristocrats are in the White House. I'm going to take a quick break. You know how long they take. I got to ask you something, and we haven't talked about this. I'm sure you've talked about it before, and tell me if it's too sensitive. But you came from Portsmouth, and then you moved to LA because your dad had work here, right?
Right. Well, I was months old when we moved here, so I never have known anything else. And it's a really weird story because
that's when I
my father Hughley isn't my biological father, but my mother was pregnant with my biological father's first daughter. But my father saw her pregnant and loved her and was crazy about her. And so when my mother broke up with my biological father, she was pregnant with me. She had me and then moved to Los Angeles. And they had two other kids. So I've never known another father. And all of us children have never known another man to be our father. Like even my, it's a weird thing to kind of start peeling back the layers and learn about your parents and then be one. You know what I mean? And
learn absolutely
about the things they went through and be. So I'd never known anything else. And just the kind of, it's really changed my perspective on what being a man is, because here I was raised by a man who raised two infants from the time my father held me when I was born. He wasn't my biological father, but he held me when I was born.
He's your father.
He's my father. And so that doesn't exist anywhere in me. I'm like, he gave me his name and everything. So, and all of the children he had, the first two were not his physical children. And then, you have my sister and my brother. And I just don't know where that comes from, where it comes from that, like love, like he was just as distant with all of us. Like he wasn't, but a warm dude in a very distant way. But
right.
where you get that thing from, and it kind of shapes the way you see the world. It shapes the way that you you traverse it. It shapes the way that you are an artist or a father or a husband. So I find myself talking to him and about him more than I ever had when he was alive. So me too
with my dad. My dad was a hard worker, didn't have any money. His father died from liver cancer from the Great Depression, and he just drank. And he had my dad raised at 10 years old, he had to raise five kids that were his younger siblings. And he just had a hard time and had a strong work ethic. And his presidents that he loved were Roosevelt and Harry Truman, who cared about the working man. And sorry, they were Democrats, everybody. But, you know, they went and gave money to the people that needed it to save the Depression. We're kind of there.
Isn't it funny how my father's, I remember when he's saying, you be a mule and not a show pony. Be a mule and not a show pony. And I know that part of what happened to me with, you know, getting the virus and passing out was sitting at home just didn't sit right to me. Like not working myself to exhaustion didn't sit right with me. So
I understand. I almost did it, but I dropped out at the last minute
because
I'd had pneumonia before and walking pneumonia while touring and didn't know. And I would have gotten it, I think.
Yeah. It is.
Or given it to people. I mean,
right now is all these things about what you believed and who you are and all of those things are at odds with the reality of what we're seeing right now. And it's an interesting time. And I think that, like, I you know, had COVID. I'm becoming a grandfather. I got accepted to a fraternity that I'd always wanted to be accepted to. So it's just all of these things.
Can you not have a little bit of a positive thought that in a few years it's going to be okay? I mean, we kind of delved into that. Maybe I misspoke.
But but all those things happen in spite of how shitty everything is.
Right.
So like literally all those things happen in spite, like when people are saying 2020 was a shitty year, I'll never say that. I mean, obviously it hasn't been a great year, but I'm like 2020, 21 could be worse. So I've been very sad about the things that I've seen.
Yes.
But
and you could have died, frankly, from a disease that people deny exists.
Right. And then there would have been this argument about what it was and it's a very, the only thing we have right now is who we are, what we stand for, and what we'll say. Because right now, literally, you have to take a side. And getting back to Gaffigan, he said the most eloquent thing, and it was really poignant to me. He said, vote for the person that your grandchildren will be proud you voted.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I guarantee you, that whole history thing, when somebody's cooking in the kitchen and somebody's going to ask, how did you do this? And then I'm going to have an answer. Matters.
This
I know Black Lives Matter, but so does precedence. So does where you stood. But when he said that, I went, okay, I can say this. I'm proud of the stances I've taken and the things I believe. And even if I've been wrong, and even if I have come out on the wrong side of it, I can give a reasonable assessment as to why it happened.
Well, you're also a man who has so much integrity that you're also able to go, oh, I was wrong. I don't think that now. And that's what we're not getting. That's how you bring, as people say, to the table. But you've got to bring, you have to listen to the most radical voices, the most whatever side. You have to be able to somehow, and yes, it can end with people walking out, but someone has to bring all this shit together or we are.
It ain't us, bro. We just talk shit for a living. Oh, I know you have your presidential chair and your fucking microphone, but you still
my presidential chair. This is just a leather thing. That's president. Maybe no, our president's in a Barca lounger. He's got like a little air vent to catch the farts. Right. I got to ask you something that I was going to ask you, which is you came up hard. You did sure. not have an easy, and I know sure. you wrote about it. I know you talked about it, but I don't know if people listening right now really know what you, and I got to know how you punched out of that.
Then I got to pretend like I got to tell you that it was beyond me, and that like I'm not a Bible thumper. Not that there, well, I'm not a Bible thumper, but I know that there was something past me to traverse and navigate all that I went through. What I ascribe it to and all that kind of stuff is different. But I know that there were so many more people. And for a long time, I felt survivor's remorse because it was kind of that traumatic. But I can't think of anything that I had that would have helped me through this other than one thing. And that was that I remember knowing that I had to strain to hear what it was I was supposed to be doing. Like I went, okay, I better listen because I know that this is not it. And I know there's something else and I don't want to miss it. So I strained to hear it. And I remember the minute I picked up a microphone, I knew it was what I was supposed to do. And to a greater or lesser degree, I feel like that every time I pick one.
Do you think that's what saved it? People that don't know, you were in a gang. And sure. And can we say what gang?
Yeah, I was a Blood. I was a 135th and Avalon. But to me, it meant the same. You know, this tribalism.
Was it being a member of something? Was that what it was?
It was just being protection and mattering. It's the tribalism. What are police officers?
Right.
What are political parties? What are organizations? What is the Chamber of Commerce?
Right. What's the frat you just got in?
That they're all, you know, they all are a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of purpose. And I think when you are distracted, when you are able to have that purpose guided a certain way, you can have a certain outcome, a positive way, you can have a certain outcome. And when you're not, you don't. But ultimately, we all want to belong.
How long were you in the Bloods, and how old were you when you first got in?
I can say this, that from the time I was 9 to the time I was 20, that all I thought about is how I could best serve that my neighborhood, how I could distinguish myself among them, how I could matter to them. And then it became a different thing. I met a woman. I started working. I started doing stand-up. I had a family.
Right.
And now my whole life is how can I matter to them? I regret the things I saw. And I regret the things that I endured and some of the things I did. But
Was that out of fear for the situation that you were in, that people were in, that you were surrounded by?
I don't think it was, because now when I look back on it, I don't think it was fear. I think it was, if it was fear, it wasn't for my life. It was fear of being nothing, fear of not being accepted, fear of being less.
Right.
So I can say this, it's the reason I speak like I speak now, because I spend so much of my life being afraid that I'm determined that even if I am, I'll do what I believe. And I think that from the time when I was growing up, I left so many things to control, and the ideas of what I thought were mattered and the purposes that I thought were important. And now I have a pretty good barometer of what I believe. Well, I'm an expert at what I believe, and I'll just never see that authority in anybody else.
And that's true freedom. That's what brings happiness. Right. When I go, this is what I think of this. No, you can't tell me this is what I think. You can't scare me into thinking this. You can't do anything if it doesn't feel right in my heart.
I'm scared often, but never so scared that I won't do what I believe. I think
you got another book title right there.
Yeah. Right. I spend so much of my life. I remember my stomach would hurt because I was so afraid. Like I was a kid, I thought I had stomach problems, but I didn't. It was just, I was nervous all the time. And I was nervous about where I lived and what my mother was thinking. How I was just scared all the time. And now I've invested so much in that, I'm not going to do it again. So even if somebody doesn't understand where I come from and what I believe, I'm comfortable enough with that.
You're pretty clear on who you are. And that's what's so great about you on stage. And there's something like when you did the Kings of Comedy tour. I mean, I'm friends with all those guys over the years. And I would have loved to tour, but it's like, yeah, Bob, wait in the car. But maybe not. I mean, if I would have had the right timing, I think I was on a sitcom at the time, I would have begged. But, you know, that camaraderie, that brotherhood, how do you look back at that and feel, oh,
I
my.
I do, but in a very nostalgic way, not right. In a very longing way. Like it's.
Right.
It's like I'm always very happy to see them. Mm-hmm. I'm always very happy to talk about, but it's not something that I have to go back to. It has a warm place in my heart. And if it never manifests itself in my future, I'll be fine. But I love them. I love Bernie Steele. I love Steve. Oh, I love
Bernie. Sarah. Bernie. I never got over Bernie.
Yeah, man. And it's like, to me, but I don't have to dishonor what we did by wondering what more could have happened. I'm satiated with what we did and happy that I was a part of it. And it's a great part of my life, and I have a lot more to do. And so I'll just when I hear about it or see it, or like we're remodeling our house, so now that they're pulling stuff out, and I'll see something, go, wow, that was great. And there are things that I've forgotten that it happened. And that's great. It's like finding money in your pocket. But I don't have to find money in my pocket to survive. I don't have to. I mean, so I love when it happens. It's like, it's great when it happens, but it ain't how you're going to earn your keep.
No. And it was a time. It was a time in your life.
It
special.
Was.
Yeah.
It was.
I got on a flight and Cedric was in the corner. And I, all of a sudden I'm right next to him. I didn't know. And I couldn't recognize him. He had on, I think, two pairs of sunglasses.
And yeah, of course.
The most gorgeous velour sweatsuit I'd ever seen.
Yes.
He smelled so good.
Yeah.
There was more bling on him. I was attracted to him. I got to be honest. But,
well,
but
yeah.
I sit down.
Old Fetty Bear.
And, you know, he likes to, we all like to keep to ourselves. You know, especially on a plane, you don't want to, well, now's. Forget that. That's a different thing altogether.
Right.
But he looks at me.
Who knew being antisocial would be? It was the precursor to social distancing. Right?
It's perfect for us.
Right.
Don't talk to me on the plane. You can't.
Right.
You're wearing a welding helmet.
But
he goes, Bob. And I go, oh my God, Cedric. And then 6 hours, we never stopped. It was like, and that's how this is with all of us. Is there something that's, and I think it's a good microcosm for what the world is, you know. If
yeah, but it's a bunch of broken people.
What's
who
wrong with that?
That's what I'm saying. Like it's a bunch.
Everybody's
like,
broken. The fucked up part is the people that don't know they're broken, and they got a Stepford face on, and they're acting like, you know, they're just.
Yeah, that's true. But it's a bunch of broken people who can't believe they're successful.
Right.
Who think that we've done something wrong. And like
I have.
Have you ever, and you kind of like, if anybody knew how fucked up we really were, that's so it's like a whole. But the one thing I'll say about this thing, and I just what I love about this thing, and it relates to what, like, I remember you called me, you said, you text me, you go, I'm doing a podcast. Does this week work? I said, oh, that's bad. You said, does this work? And I go, yeah, because it's you.
Thank you.
It's you. And you also said, look, I don't see you every day and we don't talk all the time, but I love you and I'm concerned about you. And I went, that's what it's all about. So to me, I was looking forward to talking to you, and I don't ever want it to feel like you matter, because we are two things. We're human and part of a rare fraternity, a rare group of men and women.
Yeah, very rare.
And getting rarer because of the circumstances and because of the way that we grew up in this industry and how debilitating I think social media and this whole input from society. But we literally are the last line of a dying breed of people who just call it like they see it without, you know, deference to their brand or to their representation or what that means. And so I had to talk to a man like you. I had to
have this conversation. DL. Thank you.
Likewise.
That was interesting because it wasn't like there are people like back in the day, you know, I got divorced and I wasn't going to do America's Funniest Home Videos anymore. So Larry King wanted me on CNN. It's like, what the fuck would I go on there for to talk about? Oh, I left my wife and the show's over.
Right.
Oh, let's talk about that. That'll be fun. Right. But with this, I saw the video and I went, oh my God. And all I did was care about you. And then it wasn't like an hour later I said, you want to do a podcast?
Right. No,
you know, but it was like a month or something. I don't know. It was just checking in.
But just dope to like
this is what matters. This is
people don't get it. Like all the people who call and care and offer stuff and like I remember talking to Biden for an hour and we talked about nothing but politics and Leno and Chappelle and Sykes and Hart and all these people who all of a sudden they're huge stars, but all we did was talk shit. That's all we did. Now I gotta tell you, none of them made me feel better. None of them.
No.
I was waiting for test results and like, these are horrible motherfuckers. But all they did was know how to they knew that they spoke in a we speak a language that no one else does. And it's hard to, being a comedian and being part of this fraternity is really like trying to describe a sound.
That's interesting.
Like trying to, you ever like it makes this noise and you try to describe noise or you go to a mechanic and my car's making this noise. And it's a sound you have to hear to know.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we have. And we have, like, I remember, it always feels like we're telling inside jokes and nobody else is getting them and we don't get them.
Yeah. Because we're also, because of the experience, and some younger comics possess it and they're very fortunate and gifted that they have it. But when you're with us, because of this certain generation, and my heroes were, you know, when I started at the Comedy Store, was Richard and
right.
Robin and everybody. I'd bring Eddie up to work out Raw.
Yeah.
I was hosting and stuff. So I was, that's where I felt like I belonged. And then it's shorthand. We do shorthand, but we're not learning the stage anymore. We're not learning the tricks. We're not learning the craft. We're just doing it. We just are it. And that's what's so special about you.
And you too. Hey, man, I'm going to finish drinking, and I love you. And
DL, you are just one of my favorite people. And
likewise. And I'm going to say this. Thank you for making me feel better at a time when I was really scared. I was really scared. And sometimes you always feel like you have to tell a joke or you have to cut the treacle. But thank you because I was afraid. And I was afraid after we finished, but while I was on the phone with you, I wasn't so scared. And sometimes that's all you can get out of life. And I just want to thank you for that. And there's nothing that I, you know, this is nothing, but I can't thank you at a time when I was horrified. I was a little less horrified till I got on the phone.
That means so much to me. Cause I was scared too. I was scared for you.
Well,
and I just, I'm so happy you're doing better.
I'm going to keep doing better. And you too, man. And I love you. And I'm going to finish this gin and talk some shit.
Enjoy that shit. I love you so much, DL.
Talk to you later,
be
man.
Be well.
See you on the, so I'll see you in a couple weeks on Arthur.
I'll come on yours. And then maybe, when's the grandkid
coming?
Don't
say I'll come on yours. That seems weird.
No, I'm talking, I'm going to actually come on yours. See, that's what I do. I go the and ruin
beard.
It.
You can't tell.
I didn't shave today. Does that help? You look
all right,
handsome.
Man, I love you.
Be well, man.
Take care, man.
Love
take
you,
care.
DL.
Bye. Love you back. Take Bye. Care.
All right. That was DL Hughley. That was the incredibly wonderful DL Hughley with a little bit of gin. I need a drink. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll figure it out. Well, you know what to do. First, I want to tell you his books. The book that's out right now, you really should read it. It's a bestseller. It's Surrender White People, Our Unconditional Terms for Peace. He's so prolific, and he's got a new book coming out next year called Predisposed, so look for that. And then the book that I know about, because I haven't read the new one, is How Not to Get Shot and Other Advice from White People. So that has a comedic and tragic bent to it, because he is... He's just a really special guy and a great author, by the way, and a great writer, and his mind just doesn't stop. And he's a great stand-up, so we can't wait to get out on the road and go see him when he's out there doing it. The other thing you do with this podcast is you rate, review, and subscribe. That's what you do, right? And then you say good things about it, because otherwise I can't take it anymore. Come on, don't make me block you. I wouldn't do that anyway. I want to get constructive criticism. That's the truth, right? And then follow it. If you don't subscribe, you follow, depending on where you get your podcast. And also look up there. There's a phone number. Call that phone number, and you can announce on Twitter or on Instagram stories when I'll be calling people. Or I'll be even having people leave their emails, too, so I can Zoom with them. We can have a Zoom talk, which is new and fun. And it'll go to the YouTube page, which has hardly anybody on it, but I'm on it. Anyway, this has been Bob Sagitt's Here For You. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I did. I really did. I can't lie. I don't lie. I do a pitch. I'm a pitchman. I do a commercial, you know, so I'll reinforce that, because that's how you stay in business. I'm a small business. I got to do commercials. One day. Now, there'll always be commercials. Anyway, guys, gals, indigenous small marsupials, take care of yourselves. Be well, be safe, wear a mask. If people tell you that you don't need to, it means you're in space. So have a good one, and just be well, and send in all my best. Bob Sagitt, Here For You.